And welcome to the Glacially Musical Podcast. It is beer, metal, and swearing. Of course, I am Nick Cameron, the founder of Glacially Musical. I am joined by my good friend, a man who can sing, he can dance, he can worm his way into your heart. But unlike Elvis, the only thing he appropriated was our love. Keefe Chakas, how are we doing today, buddy? Wait, oh, all shook up, Chakas. I screwed up. I screwed
That's
up.
they both work. That's a top tier intro right there. Maybe like a top three in the whole history of my existence on this podcast. Thank you, sir. It's very kind of
No
you.
problem. How are you doing today? You good?
I'm pretty good, man. I referred to you on another podcast as my other podcast husband, and I'm just gonna go with that.
I would rather be the podcast
Well, I mean, like, I have a whole
No, that's
other
what I want.
I
That's what I
have a
want.
whole you've been watching too much Sopranos.
We'll get to
Or
that in a minute. We will.
Casino. I was
No.
visit what were you doing with your guma? I was giving her a skiff, Hey. Artie Biscano could fuck up a cup of coffee, this guy. What a
Thank
balloon
you for
head.
that. As we always do, we have the greeting, the beer check, the vinyl check, the shirt check, the news check, and the meat of the day. This week, thank you for joining us for Slayers South of Heaven. We are in part five of the Slayer series, and we have two more episodes after this. So thank you for coming along on this wild ride. My beer check this week is the official unofficial beer of the Glacially Musical Podcast. Urban Chestnuts Stilipa, or STL IPA, however you want to call it. And the finger fudge pour down the middle.
Nice pour.
Why, thank you.
So to you're waiting for me. Again, no beer. So another liquid death.
Murder your thirst.
This is a severed lime, pouring it into my glacially musical poured glass once again.
Cheers, my friend. YouTube happy hour if you choose to celebrate.
Cheers and beers. And if you don't drink, that's fine too. You might need a beverage of some kind of water or something refreshing.
I'm going to skip my news check this week because I didn't actually see anything that really caught my fancy, to
Well,
be perfectly.
we're now out of order, isn't it? Vinyl check, shirt check, news check. We never
Well,
do that
yes, but
anymore.
I'm eschewing my news check because I'm also got a couple records
Sure enough.
yeah.
I have several news items I can cover, so you go ahead and do your vinyl check, sir.
Okay. Step one is the second half of Rockford, Illinois. Motley Crue, Girls, Girls, Girls. This album, as you may recall, as we did it on the podcast, is terrible. This is a BMG edition. I know you can't really tell what it is there, but it's got the white little rectangle. Younger listeners or listeners our age will remember the BMG CDs that had that. And when I was growing up and coming, I guess I should say when I was coming up, I definitely did not want the ones with the BMG logo. Columbia
Why?
House was okay because it was very small.
How come no BMG?
I just hated that little thing being there. It drove me nuts. I was like so into the art, man. You just couldn't besmirch the art. Record two this week is one of my personal favorite newer bands. That would be Crobot. And the title of this one is Feel This. It great cover. Nothing. Oh wait, this one does have a cool record. Cool translucent cherry apple red to match the cherry on the front, so that's pretty sweet. Now, I am deep in my Sopranos era. I am still listening to Talking Sopranos. I am still hoping we can somehow acquire Michael Imperioli to come on this podcast in order to speak about this record. His record, Zopa, La Dolce Vita. Let me pull it out of the sleeve so you can actually see the cover. It is psychedelic garage rock. Just a black record. And now I've got it in the inners and outers, as I do. During the Talking Sopranos run of during the run of the Talking Sopranos podcast, he was heavily pimping Zopa, and his partner in Zopa did the theme music for the podcast. And you know what? I figured I've loved this. I'm gonna just go ahead. I'm gonna listen to one song. If I dig it, I'll check it out, and I have really dug the whole record. So they only pressed 300 of them. This is a vinyl, you know, beer metal swearing in vinyl. So if you are one of us, you might want to go check it out. I forget where I got it, but it was, I got these for, 25 for Girls, 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 10 for Crobot, and about 25 shipped for Zopa.
Wild. I don't know anything about Michael's music. Is he sing? What is it? What does he do?
He sings and plays guitar. He's quite good. And he, if you pay attention in the talking, if you pay attention to the Talking Sopranos podcast, he routinely comments on the music, and he routinely comments on when the dialogue references a classic song. And it's really cool when you notice that. So I really enjoyed that, which made me. One of the things I've always said about getting into new artists is if I like you as a person, I am far more likely to enjoy your music or to find what's enjoyable about your music to me. So listening to him talk and really getting to know him on that show really made me want to listen to his music and really made me want to enjoy it. And I have listened to it and I do enjoy it. Even the kid approves of it.
Can I, that's really interesting. Can I confess something probably a little disappointing?
Please do.
The episode with Robert Eiler depressed me so bad, I had to stop listening to the podcast for a while. So I know that was only like the 8th or 9th one ever. So I'm way behind, obviously.
I just downloaded 60.
Yeah. I'm pretty sad. It made me very sad for him in general. You know, his story is very kind of a little tragic. Actually quit acting. Basically due to depression and, you know, like, again, it's one of those things when you had like too much too soon in your life and you can't ever come back. Like, you're never going to hit that high ever again.
That's one of the things that Jim Carrey said if he had hit Ace Ventura when he hit, because his first movie was a vampire movie, a vampire comedy.
Love It First Bite, right?
That's the one. Thank you. Love It First Bite.
Horrible. Horrible.
I enjoyed it, but I also enjoyed it when I was 10 and it was sexy. The fact that that movie was sexy should tell you exactly how, you know, how much I knew at that time. But he, had he gotten that success at Love at First Bite, he said he probably would have killed himself, you know, because it would have been too much too soon and he wouldn't have been ready. So yeah, I completely get that. That's one of the nice things about being the 857th rated podcast in St. Louis. It's not too much too soon.
Sorry, my screen just shit the bed and I started freaking out. I don't know if you could see my face. The fans can't see
me. Yeah,
face,
you're fine. You're fine.
I started flipping out like mentally. Can I do the podcast without them seeing me? I guess I can. I'm vain. I'm a little vain. Allow me my little bit of vanity. Yo, super cool checks there. I want to say Crobot's a very underrated band.
Crobot is very underrated because nobody knows who they are.
I think they have a following, and I think they just kind of like, if they were a European band, they would be so much bigger.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Like, there's a scene for that music out there. There's less of a scene for it here. They really haven't, they've toured with some big festivals. They've gotten on a couple of big tours, but they haven't had like the big tour to blow them up. Like, it's hard to say. They're from the same part of Pennsylvania, New Jersey that Zakk Wylde is from. So like,
aren't they from Pittsburgh?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I thought they were living in Pennsylvania, but Eastern Pennsylvania, Western Pennsylvania, Monroeville. Don't.
I would not go ahead and say same thing. Same. You're nope.
I don't know. Good call, I suppose. Anywho, what's my vinyl check today? Right, it's my turn. Right, was that three?
That is correct. That was three.
I have a 1-4 today. I was almost going to do a 2, but I didn't. Did get into a lot of reissues last year. A lot were sent to me graciously by record labels and friends. And so today's 1-4 is a really cool one. This is a vinyl, first time on vinyl, Soilwork Stabbing the Drama, which is really the top of their commercial acclaim.
I like that cover.
I love the cover. I love the simplicity, like a very Bolshevik artwork, possibly. Great album. I believe this is the last album with Peter Witchers as the co-founder of the band on guitar and producing. A lot of, again, the a lot of the turn of the century American metalcore and American new wave of American metal bands, Lamb of God, Killswitch Engage, Unearth, Shadows Fall, they all kind of copied Soilwork and In Flames. So this was never on vinyl in the first place. I'm going to say back in 2005 or 6. And now it is on this gorgeous, already in the Mylar, this gorgeous, also Candy Apple Red, limited edition. I think it was limited to 300, so very limited. Came in the paper with the Mylar, very thankful. Also came with some other things. Look at this very nice lyric sheet. It's kind of micro printed. I can't read this shit on the black with the deep red on the black. No help there. There is a poster of the front cover. I'm not going to open it, but you can kind of get an idea of it from this, right? Like you can imagine with your brain what that's going to be. And I kept the hype sticker on. Thanks, Nuclear Blast.
Here's hype sticker etiquette in Nick's opinion. If they send you an outer sleeve with a hype sticker on, you leave it. And at this point in time, if it's on shrink wrap, we cut it off and stick it on the inside. Oops, sorry. We cut it off and stick it on the inside.
Yeah. I tend to, if I can peel it off, I peel it off and put it on my outer sleeve. If I can't peel it off, I chop it up and I stick it in the sleeve. Love that record. I highly recommend it. People check it out. Soilwork is one of those bands I wouldn't mind doing a run on them. They went through like, they're such a weird band. They started out as like melodic death metal, like At the Gates, and then they did that like quarter sort of sweet mellow death commercial thing, and then they evolved. They kind of stayed. They're still heavy. They're still putting out great consistent records. They've obviously had a lot of turnover in the band. Dirk Verbeeren of Megadeth was the drummer in Soilwork for a very long time. But it's still kind of like heavy, but I like they're doing different kinds of melodic, like sort of a modern heavy Iron Maiden. I think you would enjoy a series on them. I don't know if we could do all their records, but maybe their early.
I'm always willing to give a band a chance. I actually got a text from my best friend on Saturday, and he said, are we sure we haven't given Mastodon enough of a chance? And my response was just, shut up.
I mean, I will beat on a drum all day about how much I love Mastodon.
You do that, and I will cut you up with a linoleum knife.
Yeah, the fact that that's the only song you can quote or mention.
No, it's the only one I like. I've heard all of them. Not all of them, but it's the only one that sticks. It's the only one, and that's when they were trying to copy King Diamond, jokingly. Anyway. Let's move on to the new. Oh, shirt check. My shirt is my Mr. Flibble is very cross with you t-shirt. Our Red Dwarf homies will definitely understand that reference. And Keefe is even wearing the appropriate gingham checked shirt to match.
Indeed. The Buffalo check, as we call it out here. My shirt check today, this is technically a Slayer shirt, but it's also Selena, because anything for Selena's. So it is the Slayer logo with the font, and it's Selena. This is, I believe, a Joey James Hernandez, who has done a lot of album art and shirt stuff.
Keefe loves his crossover shirts.
I do love my crossover thrash, and I love my crossover shirts. Since you have no metal news to share today, I will share the metal news. A few interesting things. Black Sabbath's Paranoid, the single, has crossed the billion mark on Spotify. I know Nick
Congratulations.
Is not a fan of Spotify, but I think it's pretty great that in this day and age, that like, even if you hate Spotify, the fact that Black Sabbath's arguably most popular song is one of the most played songs in the streaming era is pretty incredible. Iommi took to social media today to just say he was like honored. And
I did see that. And thanks. You're absolutely correct. You know, congratulations, Black Sabbath, for joining the upper echelons with Tay-Tay.
Yeah, agree. Tay-Tay. And it's the fourth or fifth metal song. Like, you're not a lot of metal and rock on that. Billions, 500 songs have crossed the billion mark. I know when you say it like that, it makes it sound less. But when you consider that 100,000 new songs a day are uploaded to Spotify.
Was trying to explain to a friend of mine, my friend Mike, hopefully he's listening. Hey, Mike, how's it going? Who is a big Rush fan, you know, a big new wave fan, a big punk fan. Just metal is a niche of a niche of a niche. And then when you break it up into the subgenres, it gets even more fractured and even less popular. I have seen Carcass in crowds of 200 people. and Carcass are absolute legends of a genre. It's for any metal, anything to reach the top of the pops anywhere. It's a massive, massive achievement.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I was going to say GNR, AC/DC, and Green Day, three pretty great bands, all passing the billion mark this year for songs. So I think that's pretty great. I think Metallica is going to have another one soon for Nothing Else Matters. It is what it is. anywho, other metal news this week. As I have been predicting, Jay Weinberg is officially the new drummer of Suicidal Tendencies. We were talking about the drummer merry-go-round last week on the show. I'm pretty stoked. Suicidal has a legacy of great bassists and drummers. Drummer merry-go-round. Eloy is probably the new drummer of Slipknot. Jay fired by Slipknot goes to Infectious Grooves. Sepultura takes the drummer from Suicidal. Suicidal takes the drummer who used to be in Slipknot. Yada, 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 yada. Pretty spectacular. I don't know if you have any feedback on that news, but...
Nah, just, you know, Mama's hooked on Mary Kay, Brother's hooked on Mary Jane, and Daddy's hooked on Mary Three Doors Down on this Mary, Mary, Merry-Go-Round. New Kacey Musgraves record next week.
Okay, then. I saw her live. She's pretty good.
I have seen her as well. It was amazing.
Are you a fan? Are you familiar with Maren Morris at all?
I'm not.
Okay. And I know you said you don't like Brandi Carlile, which is also disappointing.
I have one of her records, and it just did not strike me like the performance on SNL did. And I've tried. I don't know if I just got the wrong one or what. I mean, I feel like it's my fault. I don't feel like it's her fault. I feel like I'm the one that's messing this up.
Nick internalizing it. It's my fault I don't like her. I don't know what's wrong with me. Oh, you.
But I don't do that for Mastodon. Mastodon is the reason why I don't like Mastodon. It's their fault.
You're definitely wrong there. You're super wrong.
No matter what I say, I'm just wrong in Keefe's eyes. I'm just the wrong.
No, we agree a lot. We agree a lot.
But it's more fun to point out when we don't agree and you say that I'm wrong. Moving forward.
I'm sorry. All right. Last two things. Korn today have been teasing something with their debut album. Their debut album turns 30 this year. And the band has announced they're doing one, not a tour, but one stadium show in L.A. at the BMO Stadium. It's the soccer stadium, the new soccer stadium in L.A. Slipknot played there and had a Knot Fest there. And it's Korn, Evanescence, Gojira, Spirit Box, Vended, and probably one more band I'm forgetting. That's the only show so far. I have a feeling they're going to do that big stadium show and then take a smaller version of that on tour. I can't imagine they wouldn't do it. I don't know that they're going to play the whole album because Jonathan has said that final track, Daddy, that is about some trigger warning abuse that's happened to him. He doesn't like performing it anymore. He feels bad that he doesn't perform it, but he doesn't want to keep performing it. He's like, why would I do that to myself? It's like 30 years old. I'm 50-something. Why do I want to do it? I think it's pretty cool. I know it's very trendy for bands. We're going to talk later in this episode about full album plays and why or why not to do them and why bands choose to not do them. And then finally, just in the spirit of Slayer, just a reminder, as I will be reminding everyone through the 31st of March, you can win 2 VIP tickets to see the very first comeback show of Slayer in 5 years at Riot Fest from Ghost Cult. You can enter to win at ghostcultman.com. It's the pinned post, but we'll link it in the description of this podcast for the next few weeks if that's okay with you, Nick.
I'm totally fine with that. In fact, I demand it.
I have nothing else, so if you really want to move forward...
I will move forward. Let's do this thing. We're going to set the Wayback Machine to February 1986 when Rain and Blood comes out, and of course Slayer then goes on tour. What surprises me is Slayer goes on a very minimal touring schedule for Rain and Blood, which was their massive leap forward as it was, you know, anyway. So they played a few festivals at the beginning of the year, and basically their only tour was a fall tour between the US and Canada. They played Slayton Fest, Slatana Fest. God, that's a stupid name. Slotana Fest 1986. They played the community center in Salinas, California in February, show in March, and then nothing until August.
And did you say Salinas, Texas? Sorry.
That's Selena. La camiseta que ahorita estás te llevando me está leyendo como Selena. No es Selena. Selena está deletreado con una I.
Settle anyway. Down, colonizer. Go ahead.
Just because my accent is Spanish and my dialect is Mexican and I sound like a damn weirdo when I go down there doesn't make me a colonizer. It makes me just refusing to. I just refuse to change my accent. I mean, I learned the accent. I'm not doing another one.
You wipe any. You Ben Affleck. That's it, Ben Affleck.
Here comes the Boston Massacre. The Don Kings! Anyway, so then they played a show in August in New York, and then they started a tour in Lemoore and Brooklyn in 1986, and then they went through early December.
What was that set list?
That is it.
Do we know?
I'm sorry, the set list?
Yeah,
I can get you. Let's get the Lemoore set list because that's a famous venue. Oh, that is not a good set list. It's only got three.
I was there once.
Never been. I know Ace Frehley played there the night it closed.
There was two Lemoores, Lemoore East and Lemoore Extra or whatever, Staten Island.
Interesting.
And I went to the original once and the second one a few times.
Okay, this might be the worst Slayer set list you could ever come up with. Raining Blood, Angel of Death, Die with a Sword, Praise of Death, Criminally Insane, Necrophiliac, Necrophobic. They had a little necro suite going on there. If only there was one more song about necro, then they could have had a full moment. Captor of Sin, Black Magic, Reborn, Post-Mortem, Epidemic, Hell Awaits, Chemical Warfare, Altar of Sacrifice, and little, rarely played, Jesus Saves. Jesus Saves does not make it into the canon going forward.
No, but it's a good closer. It's too bad.
That is a good closer. I've seen Slayer, I think, 5 times, and I have never heard Jesus Saves.
Yes.
In fairness, I have only seen them from 1998 forward. So I got to see Jeff once. I'm happy I got to see Jeff once, even if it was only for 35 minutes. Anyway, so great set list. They go back into the studio, of course. And in 1988, right now, thrash music, thrash metal has crossed out of the underground. It's wouldn't say popular, but the name Slayer is not unheard of. The name Megadeth is not unheard of. Metallica has just toured as the opening act of Ozzy Osbourne at the same time. So it's important for them to go into the studio and really come out with something great. Did they do that? We'll get to that in a minute. But I think it's safe to say what we are looking at is a change. As in 1991, the band that I can't stop, that we cannot stop mentioning, said, we took the mini epic as far as it could go. And so what Slayer says in 1988 is we took the hardcore, super fast, mega punk thrash as far as it could go. So they embark on a new style. And this is when, around this time, is when young Nick becomes a fan of Slayer. Because for me, because I grew up on bands like Iron Maiden and Black Sabbath and Metallica later, what metal means to me is a very high quality of music, a certain progressiveness to the music, you know, some usage of arpeggios, not just an E5 power chord all the time, Ace Frehley looking at you, and lots of other bands. And so when I first heard songs that off of this album, it really struck a chord with me, because it wasn't just thrash metal AC/DC, which they revert to later, much to younger, I wouldn't say young, but younger Nick's chagrin as well, when we get back to albums like Repentless and Christ Illusion and World Pain and Blood, for that matter. But they realize that they need to go into the studio. They need to go in and do something amazing and surprising. And I guess that's really just all the lead up I have on this. They didn't do too much in the meantime. If you want a history lesson, I can tell you that between these two albums, you know, the Cardinals got robbed by the Homer Dome in Minneapolis. Just going to point out, no National League team ever won up there.
Kirby
Brett Hull's.
What? Kirby Puckett and Frank Viola, boy. They were unbeatable.
You can't, I mean, I want to hate Kirby Puckett, but being the Cardinals fan that I am, and Cardinals fans are very pompous, sanctimonious sons of bitches. God, tip my hat to that guy. That guy was amazing. I mean, just.
This is Nick, by the way, saying that Cardinals fans are sanctimonious to a Yankees fan. Oh, my God.
Oh, no, you have no idea. You have no idea. Okay. Matt Holliday is traded to the Cardinals in 2008. Okay. They play the Dodgers that year. Lawyer wife was lawyer girlfriend at the time. We are at a bar, actually very near my house now. It's a Mexican restaurant now. And we're watching the game. We're watching, and there's a pop fly out to center field to Matt Holliday. Remember Matt Holliday? Okay. Matt Holliday, and he muffs it. Okay, he muffs it. And the Dodgers go on to win the game and take a series lead 2-0. I was filming because I was a St. Louis blogger at the time. I was gonna have like this amazing like BlackBerry footage of the crowd of the bar going blah, blah, you know, going nuts, and then dead silence. And I'm like, oh, I can't post this now. Anyway, so on Monday, the next day, I'm going to work, and maybe it wasn't Monday, I don't know. Next day, I'm going to work, and I'm listening to the local sports talk radio, because at this time in my life, I was done with music because I had listen to Eric Clapton and Black Sabbath and all those bands too many times, so I couldn't listen to them anymore. So they're talking about, oh man, what do we do? Because Matt Holliday was a pending UFA. He was a pending free agent. So there was a 20-minute conversation on Sports Talk Radio about whether or not he should get a standing ovation when he comes to the plate for the first time in St. Louis. Same thing with Scott Rolen, okay? Scott Rolen leaves the team angry at Tony La Russa. Again, 20-minute talk on Sports Talk Radio about whether or not he deserves the standing ovation for when he comes back. That's sanctimonious. No, you guys don't have baseball heaven written on your ballpark. It actually is, because, I mean, it's one of the greatest stadiums of all time, and it's been there for, you know, forever. You don't call yourselves the best fans in baseball and then say, oh, well, we didn't give ourselves that. The media calls us that. So, but yeah, but you're calling yourselves that now. So, fuck you. Yield my time.
Fair enough. Always a great table setter. Like Ricky Henderson for the Yankees.
I like to think of myself as Vince Coleman in the 3 years when he was really good. Not the other 10.
Not his time with the Mets at all.
No, he had 3 years in a row with the Cardinals where he stole 100 bases. He was the first player ever to do that.
I know. Yeah, he was unbelievable. You could not stop him. He'd just take the second base every time. He was too fast.
There was a statistic, and I don't remember what it was, but he set a record for most times stealing second and third in a season.
Ridiculous.
If only he could get on base. His batting average was only .250.
I think, yeah, that's true. He wouldn't take enough pitches to walk. I think that was the problem.
Yeah, that's probably true.
He also had a little bit of pop in his bat. So, like, I think he felt like if I got a good pitch, I'd just drive it and run and get triples, which is how he got a lot of triples.
Remind you of anybody from a very popular movie who was a leadoff hitter? Willie Mays Hayes. He had a mustache.
Did I guess correctly?
You guessed correctly. You got too much speed. You need to hit it on the ground and run, beat it out. Every fly ball, you owe me 20 push-ups.
Major League. Good stuff. Remember when Charlie Sheen was awesome? Nah.
Yes, I do. It was around this time.
I have been watching Moneyball a lot lately.
The movie, is there a show?
The movie. I wish there was a show.
Okay, because I finished the book. I actually was reading it when I was in Vegas.
The book is quite good.
It's one of the coolest books I've ever read because it talks about a literal deconstruction of a sport. I mean, no, I've never read another book like that.
Yeah, there's nothing like it. One thing of note before we dig into the record, which I will lead this week, let's discuss, this is worth discussing. So, you know, at one point Lombardo quit the band during the Rain and Blood tour. That's why the tour was so limited. He quit And they went in with a fill-in, Tony Scaglione of Whiplash, New Jersey thrash metal legends.
I can't be the only person that just stopped counting the times Dave Lombardo quit Slayer.
He has quit or been fired many times. This is why I would really like to get on DX Ferris again, shameless plug of his assorted Slayer books and his one Goodfellas book and a new book he's writing. I don't know what about, but he, because it's a secret, but he seems to have the best priory knowledge of Dave's ins and outs of the band and the why. The why is the thing. And again, it seems to always be about money. Money.
The play is the thing.
I know, but sometimes it's about the ego and the money. And he was like, I wasn't making any money. And I figured if we're going to be doing this professionally on a major label, I want my rent and utilities paid. I don't
when think that's... When did they get to a major label?
Well, so technically, Def Jam is a major label because they have distribution through Geffen, which this album came out on Geffen with the Geffen imprint on it, as well as Def American and Def Jam. And then Russell Simmons and Rick Rubin dissolved their partnership, and it just became Def American and then American.
I like American Recordings the best. I think that's my favorite.
Probably the best name.
Just for the record, I was also told by the owner of the record space on Gravois in Afton, Missouri, that Def Jam 80s vinyl is the worst. Yeah, like, it's so, absolute crap. So this, I do have something coming in the mail. I bought a copy of Rock Hard, Beastie Boys Rock Hard, which is completely lost because Angus wouldn't let them. They put it out. It kind of came and went. And Angus basically said, don't do it again. Yeah. Even though Mike D asked him if he could put it on a greatest hits years later. Yeah. Also, the song is not very good.
No, it's bad. I knew you were going to buy that. Like, in my bones. I saw it recently. I was like, Nick's going to buy that. Watch. I knew it.
I came across that and a coup record for like $20 each.
I know you're a Boots Riley fan.
That I am.
Have you seen his movies? His movies are very strange.
I have seen Sorry to Bother You, which was amazing. I have not watched Virgo yet.
Yeah, Sorry to Bother You disturbed me greatly.
I had to watch it like two or three times, and I saw it twice in the theater because a friend of mine is also a big fan of Boots. And so I saw it with a lawyer wife who was like, what the fuck did you just do to me? And then I saw it a second time, and I'm like, oh...
And I rather like the actual star of the movie is Lakeith. Is it Lakeith Robertson? I probably said that wrong. Probably.
I want to say Johnson, but that doesn't maybe. Seem right.
He's a great actor. That dude.
He's amazing. He's
gonna be somebody to be looking back, like when we're older, that dude came around at that time, and he's incredible.
He has one song on the soundtrack as well, which I have on vinyl.
Right. So Lombardo quits for the rest of '86. This album comes out in July. Rain and Blood comes out. Sorry, Rain and Blood came out in '86. He quits during the tour. He doesn't come back until sometime. He's gone for like quite a while, 6 to 8 months. And Rick Rubin is the person that called him and said, please come back, please come back. They want you back, but they didn't call him. Rick Rubin called him. He's not even their manager.
I've always felt like Slayer had a very uneasy tolerance of Dave Lombardo. I guess that's the only way I can describe it. I wouldn't say uneasy peace because it was never peaceful after he left. And finally, when they were doing press for Divine Intervention, they were saying, you know, we're not going to talk shit on Dave, but there were a lot of problems that we used to have that now we don't. And I would say this is probably one of those kinds of problems where, you know. But yeah, so he leaves. Man, are all drummers like this? Like Peter Criss quit Kiss like 10 times.
Drummers seem to be a temper bet a lot. I think that's, you know, the Spinal Tap joke about drummers just blow it up, I think has some weight.
A good friend of mine once said, if you are a drummer, you have got to be able to separate your brain to be able to do things with all your different extremities, meaning you have a broken brain. And based on every drummer I've ever known, wow, Joe, I think you might have saved the world. Anyway, we can pitter patter, or we can get to the trick or tracker.
Pitter patter, let's get at her, as Nick likes to say. I just want to one last thing, which is like again, for the second time in 2 years, Slayer puts out a record in a year full of great metal albums, including the impossible to not talk about former subject of the Glacially Musical podcast, Metallica. Maybe you've heard of those guys. They're pretty good. And Justice for All, which comes out after this record.
They've had a couple albums out, I think, that I've heard, I'm little familiar with.
You might be familiar with them.
Weren't they on that Stranger Things show? Wasn't that
That was Master of Puppets. Not too shabby. Pretty good riffing there, folks. Pretty good riffing. Yeah, man. Let's do the track by track. This record comes out in July. Back to the Well. Rick Rubin and Slayer co-produce. Def Jam, last record on Def Jam. Larry Carroll and his collaborator on the album cover once again. Glenn Friedman on the band photo once again. So, like, if it ain't broke, don't break it. You know what I'm saying? And the album begins, like, right away. And again, we didn't have the benefit of a lot of singles or metal radio back then. But the album opens with the decidedly not fast South of Heaven, the title track. And it's pretty incredible, gotta be honest. One of the most evil songs of all time. Great riff, great song, Tom Araya. Finally, some lyrics by Tom. And they're awesome.
South of Heaven is an amazing song. It is that mid-tempo rocker that Metallica tried so hard to perfect on Load, but could not, and Slayer could. I will say one negative thing about this song. I liked it better the second time, and we'll talk about that next week.
Oh, you. This song is a 10 of 10. I don't know what you're talking about.
It is a 10 of 10. The next one, but the second time they do it, it's an 11 of 10.
Okay. All music on this album is by Jeff Hanneman, unless otherwise noted. And Jeff and Tom wrote the lion's share of this record. Tom on the lyrics and Jeff on almost all the songs with a few Kerry King contributions, but mostly all Jeff. No writing credit at all for Lombardo again.
Yeah, ever. Just for Kerry, he gets 3 co-writes and that's it. So Jeff is pulling, you know, maybe Dave, write a song. You want more money, write a song. It's like Mike Nesmith said to Mickey Dolenz, write a song. That's where the money is.
Possibly inspired by the painting by Munch, the famous painter, Silent Scream, the second track.
Another great song. And this one, and what we have now gotten out of this record is 2 classics. So Slayer in their first, this is their 4th full-length album. They are busting out 3 to 4 classics a record. Will they hit 4 today? Stay tuned to find out.
Good enough. I always felt like this title is squiffy, but the song is real good. I know they're,
yeah, I'll give you that.
Trying to be clever, and many bands have tried to do this since. Live Undead just sounds odd to my ears. Like, I understand why they did it.
We're still on Silent Scream.
Sorry. Oh, we are? No, I thought you finished Silent Scream.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something. But you know what? Live Undead, Silent Scream. Yeah, but Silent Lucidity. Shut up, everybody. Don't put silent in front of things.
I mean, Mindcrime came out this year, by the way.
Fuck that record.
You stop right now. Don't you besmirch Queensryche in my presence.
You know, I have seen them 4 times.
Yeah, I know.
4 times.
It's unfortunate for you.
So badly.
Any other thoughts on Live Undead, the song?
No, it's a Slayer song that happened. It's, you know, the first 2 tracks are new. This is a reversion. And again, when we get to when we get to next week, when they do this album again, it's the same kind of stuff where they do some new stuff, but then they come back to the sweet spot. You know, you want the ball to hit the Louisville Slugger logo when you're ready to hit a dinger.
There are 4 major categories of Slayer themes and topics for their songs: war, serial murder, and, like, say, war and genocide 1A, 1B, serial killers, monsters, Live Undead is a monster song, and Satan, right? Just Satanism, evil.
They're not trying to change the world with their lyrics. They are trying to scare you. They are trying to scare you because, you know what? It's like Ozzy Osbourne said on the Don't Blame Me video. I heard a song where they said, if you go to San Francisco, put a flower in your hair. Well, I don't have any fucking shoes, so I don't have a flower to put in my hair. You know,
hippies.
I know, right?
Ready to move on to the next song, the fourth track on the record, the Jeff Hanneman composed completely and written lyrically Behind the Crooked Cross, another basically a Satan song. Religion, Satanism, evil. I always thought this song's chromatic riffs reminded me of Megadeth. Reminded me of, like, Killing Is My Business era Megadeth with the chromatic riffing. And until he gets into the fast part. I always loved this song. It was a great song.
This song and the next one could have been one song. They could have been two movements. I don't mean that, like, cut one. I'm actually giving a really strong compliment, and if you don't mind, I'll go into the next one as well. Though, I mean, everybody's favorite song off of this album that's not named Mandatory Suicide is the following song. It's not the current song. The whole time I'm listening to this, I'm driving home, I'm going down 170, trying to get back to the city, and I'm like, is this it? It wasn't it, but it flowed so well into the next song. It felt like one really long progressive Slayer song. Could you, but although that would have been over 6 minutes, could you imagine a 6 minute Slayer song? You will next week.
Not at this point in their career, but I really like Behind the Crooked Cross, and I love Mandatory Suicide. I love it.
I love both of these songs. It's peanut butter and jelly, man. This is the best tracking Slayer has had so far. I should have mentioned South of Heaven is in the wrong place. It's maybe, not in the right spot.
Maybe they should have inverted Spill the Blood in South of Heaven. That would have been not interesting if you think
that. Hey, man, I wonder if they get an idea like that on their next record to have the big super mega title track at the end and their super fast, you know, more comfortable angry track at the beginning. Foreshadowing.
So Mandatory Suicide, awesome, no notes. They played it for years. It was never out of the set list,
basically. I've seen this song several times.
Yes, so South of Heaven, Mandatory Suicide, almost both of those never out of the set. And I wish they had played this. You flip the record. I wish they had played this next one live more. Apparently, Jeff hated it. Kerry liked it. He hated this song.
The song is awesome.
Goes to War, covered infamously by Hatebreed, and I saw them do it live once. It was pretty good for the limitations that Hatebreed has as a band. But
I'm sorry, I'm at a loss. You have taken the wind out of my sail. Ghost of War is a great song. It's on Decade of Aggression.
They stopped playing it live right after that.
It has a great vocal by Tom.
Agreed.
This is
lyrics, excellent lyrics by Kerry.
The best song on side two.
Some of his best. Well,
no, it is.
Some of his best lyrics. Hanneman King, great composition, under 4 minutes, like most of this record. You know, I don't know. He just fell out of favor. There's a little article about it, where he was like, yeah, sometimes he liked the song I didn't like, and sometimes I liked the song he didn't like, and we'd fight about it. Why don't we ever do this anymore? How come we never played this more? Just became what it became, you know? This is early in their career where they could have fit, like, almost all their songs in a set list for an hour. They're all short enough except for a couple, you know?
Very, especially if they took out the 8-minute intro before Angel of Death and Raining Blood. Just go straight into them rather than piddle-paddle around.
Well, you don't want to. Raining Blood, it's got the best intro of it. Maybe any metal song that doesn't start with a straight riff. I don't want to shorten that. But
on the stage, you're going to shorten it. You're not going to play that. Yeah, anyway, never mind. Moving forward.
For an album that is straight bangers, this next couple of songs could be the soft underbelly.
Thank you. Thank you. I was going to say, we have head on.
Still bangers, but.
We have headed straight on into Rock and Roll Ain't Noise Pollution and Who Made Who.
Oh. Read Between the Lies and Cleanse the Soul. They're not bad. I listen to them. I don't skip them. But, like, do you remember them?
No. No. They're songs that happened that you didn't hate, but you don't remember them.
And similarly, honestly, Live Undead is also a lyrical, like Live Undead, Uriah and Carey wrote those seventh and eighth songs. And, you know, they're about the same. They're all about the same, actually.
Look, you know, Slayer is not the kind of band that writes great, full, start-to-front albums, typically. It's just not everybody can do that. That's why Slayer is not the kind of band that plays studio albums all the way through, except for the one album they did that's amazing all the way through, which was last week.
Fair enough.
But yes, yeah, Soft Underbelly.
A little. But not bad. They're not bad songs. They're just not...
It's still the Soft Underbelly. We are at the weakest point of the record. We are in the weakest songs.
Lucky for you, here comes a cover, which they have never done before that I can think of. And it's pretty incredible. Dissonant Aggressor by Judas Priest. Not a song you would imagine that Slayer could do. But not only do they do it, not only do it justice, they make it their own. Tom makes it a song that is impossible to replicate vocally unless you're Ripper Owens. And Tom just nails it, changes the words a little to suit himself. But honestly, phenomenal cover. 2 minutes and 35 seconds of pure metal joy.
2 minutes and 35 seconds is the perfect Slayer song length. Unless they're doing like South of Heaven-y stuff. Just go in there, hit it hard, give me a riff, give me that double beat, that double blast beat. And we didn't talk about Rick Rubin, again, really coming strong on the production. This album sounds amazing. Amazing.
I agree. Great cover. And then they close with the aforementioned Spill the Blood, a Jeff and Jeff composition and lyrics. And honestly, Spill the Blood, for the longest or second longest song on the album, like I said, almost could have been the opener. It's the most... But Silent Scream and Spill the Blood are the two songs that are the most like Rain in Blood. I don't know when they were written, but they were the most older Slayer sound to me.
I disagree a little. I think the other two, Read Between the Lies and Cleanse the Soul, are a bit more like Raiden Blood. Or maybe that's not fair. Maybe it's more like Hell Awaits, those two. They're just very simplistic and very forgettable. That's why. And I still think, for the most part, Show No Mercy and Hell Awaits are pretty forgettable records, except for the creme de la creme, about four songs between them, unfortunately. But Spill the Blood, another great song. It is a great ender. You know, like Mitch Hedberg says, if you do 45 minutes of comedy, you got to start strong and you got to finish strong. You can't be like pancakes, 15 minutes and you're all sick of them. And that's, and Slayer's tracking is really good. When you're a band like Slayer or AC/DC, and I jokingly throw out that comparison a lot, know that that's done with love. AC/DC is an amazing band, and they have resonated with millions upon millions of people and sold tens and hundreds of millions of records. They have a formula. They know how to work it. I'm the kind of person that really likes bands that say, here's our new album, and this new album has this identity. That's what Nick loves. I have a minority opinion. That is not normal. Most people, when they hear Led Zeppelin 1, they went, wow, do that again. And then it's Led Zeppelin 2. And then they're like, do that again. And Led Zeppelin is, no. We have a new thing now. Okay, we get to the next record. Do that new thing. No. We have another new thing. And we're going to do this forever, so buckle up. Slayer, AC/DC, they're not those kinds of bands. There's a little bit of growth. There's a little bit of change. And there's nothing wrong with either choice you take.
This was a pretty radical departure. So I'm gonna do a sum up that I normally don't do, which is talk about three pinnacle things about this record. First of all, this record's a classic, right? Listen, now it's a totally classic. When it came out, it divided the fans. It was critically drubbed by most everybody in the press, including the metal press at the time, drubbed this record like, oh, it's not fast. What are they doing? Blah, blah, blah. It's all over the place. Blah 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 blah. It's a great record. It's an absolutely the right move. You're not gonna outfast Raining Blood. You're not gonna outfast Angel of Death. It's just gonna sound more. They just would have been derided for that. They took it in a new direction. It's still Slayer. There's still some fast things on here. There's still the hallmarks of the band. I think it's better lyrically. Tom is much improved as a vocalist again, over another album over album improvement for the whole band. They sound great, great recording, as you said. Fantastic artwork. Funny enough, this album is their first time they charted in America. Now we know that Hell Awaits sold 40,000 copies. I'm not sure of the amount of copies Rain and Blood has sold.
Show No Mercy.
Hell Awaits sold 40,000, no?
No Mercy sold 39,000. It was the fastest they had ever done.
Okay, right. Okay, so, well, I mean, it was there. Yeah, it's there. Yeah. So I think, like, I don't know what this sold, but it was the first time they charted, which is...
As of now, it's gone gold, and that's it. Yeah. So again, when you talk about metal, even the biggest metal bands that are just metal bands that didn't break out, we're talking about an abject classic from 35 years ago that's gone gold, that everyone that listens to metal knows.
It did not go gold the first bunch of years it was out.
Right. It went gold now.
Yeah, it's gold the last 15 years, 10 years.
Right.
And then the other thing is, by the way, I said 57 in the United States, number 11 in Finland, which was their highest ranking, and 25 in the UK, 23 in Germany. So, you know, Dutch albums, top 131. You know, interesting rankings. But yeah, and then, yeah, man, like, but it's wild to me at the time. I was in the throes of being a metalhead when this came out. Really a threat, my thrash life. I was living my thrash life in high school when this came out. And I remember loving this. And I actually, this is maybe my favorite Slayer record, actually. My favorite Slayer song is on the next record. I mean, I consider these three records a trilogy, and we'll talk more about it next week. But, like, yeah, I mean, pretty spectacular record to me, and a perfect follow-up. They did actually progress and change and improve. And then I'll say one last thing, which is they were asked after the Still Raining shows with the Raining Blood concert, Carrie was asked in an interview, according to this Wikipedia entry, would you now do South of Heaven as a whole album? And he's like, no, I don't think so. I don't think we would go back and do that again. Like, it's starting to become too trendy, and we did it once. We did it with that classic album. I don't want to become that band that does it and does it and does it. So, respect. Much respect.
At that point in time in the music world, it was very trendy to do full albums. Rush did a full album around that time. King Diamond was touring Abigail around that time. I believe Queensryche was doing Operation Mindcrime around that time.
They did Mindcrime 1 and 2 together.
Was it? No, God, that's just torture.
Anthrax did Among the Living in 2007 for the 30. Yeah.
See, and there we go.
But what they did that I liked is they didn't play it straight through. They broke it up and played it out of order, along with their other hit songs.
When I saw the Lemonheads the first time, they played The Shame About Ray, but they didn't play it in order. I didn't know that, so I didn't care. But I know that now.
It's hard to care when the lead guy of the band cares at absolutely zero about his performance.
He cared this day. The second time I saw them, not so much. Lawyer Wife, big fan. So, a funny personal anecdote. The first car I ever financed was a 2000 Mercury Cougar. And I kept going to dealership to dealership to dealership to dealership to find a car because I had to have a stick. I drove only stick until the kid was born, literally until the kid was born, because I figured I would need an extra hand when she was born. And they could not get my financing secured on Saturday. But they're like, don't worry, we're 100% sure we can do this. Go ahead and take it. So I took it, I drove it around, showed it to all my friends and my family, having a great time, listening to Decade of Aggression on CD in the car. And I go to work on Monday and I'm showing it off because I'm like, I no longer have that beat up hoopty 1986 Toyota Celica. Again, this is 1980. And if you are of a certain age, you remember when all the cars out there were rusted out shit boxes or brand new cars. It's not that way anymore because cars last longer, thankfully. But I'm talking to my buddy Ben at work and he's like, yeah, that happened to me one time. They said they were going to be able to finance me and they couldn't. So they took it back. And I went, oh no. So I go to sign the paperwork and I had no contact with them because that company that I worked for was very serious about, you know, no off the clock stuff. So I get there and they're like, yeah, just let me get the keys from you, you know? And I'm like, what? So I give him the keys. He's like, yeah, just go ahead and sit in the waiting room. It'll be fine. And I'm waiting. 10 minutes go by, 15 minutes go by, and I hear my salesman come in, and one of his supervisor goes, "Dude, where were you?" It's like, "I went to wash it, and then I got in the car and South of Heaven was playing, and I couldn't get out." So the fact that he was listening to Slayer in my car gave me extreme anxiety because he wanted to hear South of Heaven. You know what? I appreciate that. Signed it, got the car, drove it for the next 10 years. Anyway, this record is great. And yes, it is definitely a stylistic change. It is a step forward. It is a new Slayer. There are some looks back to the old Slayer when those are the songs I like the least, because I don't like it when bands repeat themselves. But that's just me. You know, this record, I would say probably 8.5 out of 10. There's nothing bad. There's some really good stuff. But you can't be a 10 out of 10 to me if I don't remember every song.
I would go as high as a 9 for this one, because I think the change was great. South of Heaven is one of the top 3 or 4 songs ever by the band.
Agreed. Probably,
maybe the best lyrics ever by the band, actually. You can make a case. You can make a case. There's few more evil songs than South. That opening riff, those lyrics, that just the delivery, the conviction.
That atonal arpeggio that's not an arpeggio because it's not an actual chord.
Yeah, agreed. I got nothing else, man. Great record.
All right, I will take us home this week. I believe it is my turn. If you have made it this far, you are amazing. You are awesome. Please like, subscribe, review, comment, tweet at us, tell a friend. That is, we are not on a big network. We are small content creators. We love doing this, and we would love to bring this to more people. And we have exhausted our circle, and we need to get into yours. So let me slide into your circle. Not like that. I'm married. Leave me alone. Anyway, thank you very much for checking us out this week. It is greatly appreciated. I, of course, am Nick Cameron, joined by my good friend, my co-host, Keefe of Ghost Cult Mag. This is a glacially culty mag joint something. I don't know. Anyway, as we say every week, this has been the Glacially Musical Podcast. It does not play in Peoria.